Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I have the great joy of being Paula Gordon. Bill Russell is here with me. We're in New York with James Carse.
I have a question.
Yes, you may.
What you're saying about the infinite game sounds a lot like the journey as opposed to the destination.
Right. Actually, one of the better illustrations of an infinite game comes from the ancient religious tradition of Taoism. The word Tao, T-A-O, but pronounced Tao, as I'm sure you know, probably most of your listeners know, means the way. Now, what was interesting about Taoism is that they really conceived of the way not as a way to something, but as a way that it remains a way. It's a constant path. You're never really... You don't really arrive somewhere. You could even say you're always leaving somewhere. And the Taoists even say things like, every step makes it a different journey. Yeah, I think that's a very good way to think about it.
We're in a much more concrete metaphor, myth, if you would, in the Western way of living.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And one of the things that takes us to is lots of dead ends. And what I'm hearing you say as you talk about both the infinite game and as you reflect on how the Taoist perspective opens things up is that we can begin to break out of some of the strangleholds that have just choked people in the current condition. And what we see as we're talking with folks who are changing how it is and how it will be is they're finding ways to break out of the old way. Is that right?
Yes, right. I don't know if this is going to be, again, too academic. Stop me if it is.
Oh, okay.
there's an exciting thing going on right now, I think. I think it's exciting in the academic societies. An awareness that a certain kind of thinking, which scholars like to call apocalyptic thinking.
Apocalyptic?
Apocalyptic has begun to take over our imaginations. Now, an apocalypse literally means a revelation. It's come to mean the end of time. And for example, the last book in the New Testament is called the Revelation of St. John, the Book of Revelation, which really means apocalypse.
Yeah.
So, and that's for example... Yeah.
I was just going to say, a lot of people think that that's terrible and that it's all over and they're scared of the apocalypse. So all of a sudden you're telling me this is okay?
Well, no. I mean, yes and no. Some people want...
that's a very Taoist answer of you.
Some people want an end to come. Christians are very big on... some Christians are on this, the so-called second coming of Christ, where a new kingdom will be established and the righteous saved and the unrighteous dealt with in some other way. But Christians aren't the only ones. I mean, for example, in ecology, in environmental issues, we find a lot of people also thinking in apocalyptic terms. That is, it's running out. We're going to come to a great disaster somewhere out there. It's waiting for us. It's going to come no matter what. In political terms, we've been in a long period where major world leaders have been thinking apocalyptically, that is, in terms of a great war that will end everything. Well, I think that's important because what's happened is by focusing on our habit of thinking in end-of-history terms, we begin to see the alternative, which is to see an ongoing history and find ways of keeping that history alive rather than ways of bringing it to an end.
Is that an infinite game?
Absolutely, an infinite game. Yeah, it's.
There's a lot more hope in something going on than in something coming crashing down.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
that's where the hope
it?
Lies, right?
And I'm interested in what's happening in the academic, which is unusual for me.
yes, it is.
Going on in the academic environment, because you say the end of history, which is has been a popular book. There's another one out called The End of Science, a popular book. What is there intellectual ferment around this, and what is being spun off from this discussion?
There's a lot of ferment around it. I'm not sure you could say easily what's being spun off. I think what's happening is there's a change in the, at least among the people I'm familiar with through my readings and through a collegial relationship, there's a shift to a different kind of a conversation about the world. One of the ways to put it is people are less ideological. It's as though the ideologies have more or less come to an end. Marxism is finished. Capitalism is still intact, but no one really makes very much of a big spiritual point out of it. So what is out there? What now is going to guide us in the future?
And guidance is a very important question in such an uncertain
time. That's right. And when there are so many open questions, mm-hmm. so many unknowns, at least the people I know, are beginning to develop ways of thinking that are themselves open-ended. Mm-hmm. And I find this very exciting.
I'm reminded of Joseph Campbell, "We have no ideology, we have no theology, we dance."
Oh, yeah,
which reminds me of Walter Freeman, who talks about we become human by virtue of dance, by engaging in our environment. The science that we see has a great deal of interaction between all the pieces leading to something else, leading to something else, none of which is predictable. And it sounds as if that is very, how to say, compatible.
Yeah,
with what you're talking about and what's going on in
yes, actually, yeah, Bill, no doubt you know this. There's a famous Sanskrit word, lila, that is used in a lot of Hindu thought, particularly philosophical thought, which literally means dance. And their view, the Hindu philosophers, was that the universe is itself a dance, and from the Hindu point of view, no end. They are not apocalyptic thinkers like Christians. Christians are the most, and Muslims also, are the most emphatic apocalyptic thinkers.
The children of Abraham.
The children of Abraham, except for the Jews. Now, the Jews don't have... In fact, one of my favorite examples of an infinite game is the rabbinical tradition in Judaism.
How so?
Well, every text, every truth is open to further question. The rabbis classically even taught that God himself is open to question. God may make mistakes and he has to be challenged.
Quite shocking to some people.
Well, yes, that's right.
This is not what one learns in many Sunday school classes.
That's right.
This also sounds a great deal like Jack Spong talking about re-examining the roots of Christianity, where we have a serious misinterpretation of...
Yeah, right. We are... That's another thing that's going on right now in the academy. I think it may not be going on so much in the public.
But is that not the responsibility of the Academy to start that thinking?
Yes, I know.
Come on. It's got to start someplace.
I feel very responsible about that. I mean, here I sit in my little Greenwich Village apartment watching the world roll by, reading and thinking, but
that's very important.
Not talking to those people out the window very much.
Well, so, you got to do the thinking, and we'll help you talk to those people outside the window.
Let me, in that context, we've done some programs with people from the Santa Fe Institute and the whole science of complexity, and Murray Gell-Mann, the Nobel laureate, has a wonderful formulation. He said, you've got to do the analysis before you can do the synthesis.
Well,
you have to be in the right domain.
That's right.
And it would seem to me that that's at least part of your responsibility sitting in your apartment, just to get us in the right part of the universe.
No, that's obviously the way we defend ourselves and justify our daily existence.
Well, she is an academic.
Our income, they're modest incomes, but at least we're not, like the rest of the world, exactly gainfully employed, but we are employed. Now, yes, I mean, I think there's absolutely every demand on a responsible human being to think things through clearly. And sometimes this means painfully, sometimes it means at great length, in great detail, frustratingly complicated issues. But I think it really has to be done, and that is one of our responsibilities. Now, it also is a responsibility to get to communicate out of this to the world.
And to turn it into action.
Sure. I mean,
we're going to come back in just a minute. We're with James Kars, who for many years was a professor of history and literature of religion, professor of history and literature of religion at New York University. Bill Russell is here. I am Paula Gordon. We're in Greenwich Village, New York with James Kars. Stay with us. We'll be right back for the Paula Gordon Show.